You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of Stranger.
Listen up! This young lady here is running the marathon for Brigham and Women's Hospital. So skip around, Estella, and donate to a good cause.
Yay! I'm gonna be there at the finish line for you.
I'm gonna make a big sign for you.
Doesn't show up for anything. And then he shows up.
There was an explosion, and your legs, they're gone, bro.
Welcome home. Is it good to be back?
What are you doing?
Talking to you. What are you doing?
Dancing.
You're trying to make a hero out of me.
You need to tell your family what's going on with you.
Take my mom, take my
baby. I can't do this. I can't do it.
This is the first time you're in this week and you had 3 appointments.
You just have to show up.
Show up! I showed up for you!
You remind me of my son. He died. Helping you made me feel like I helped my son. And for that, I am grateful.
You're grateful.
You showed the world that they can't break us no matter what the hell they do.
There was this time in the hospital when, like, I just wanted to give up.
And we'll rise up.
Look at this! Boston strong.
And now? I just wanna live.
I just want people to see how amazing my son is.
I'm gonna walk, you know, I'm gonna walk with you again someday.
All right, everyone, you were just listening to the trailer for Stronger, and the story is as follows. Jeff Bowman loses both of his legs when 2 bombs explode during the Boston Marathon on April 15th, 2013. After regaining consciousness in the hospital, Jeff is able to help law enforcement identify one of the suspects, but his own battle is just beginning. With unwavering support from his family and girlfriend, Bowman embarks on a long and heroic journey to physical and emotional rehabilitation. The film is starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Tatiana Maslany, Miranda Richardson, and Clancy Brown. It is directed by David Gordon Green and written by John Polano. Joining me for this review, I have Matthew Garrell.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody.
All right, so Matthew, bona fide Oscar contender here. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal should have gotten a nomination for Nightcrawler. He's been giving us consistently excellent performances over the last, decade pretty much at this point. And now we have Stronger. Yes or no, is Stronger the film that finally lands Jake Gyllenhaal that second Oscar nomination?
I wouldn't be surprised if it does that. I mean, it's the exact sort of movie that is designed to get actors Oscar nominations. Now, obviously, we thought there was a strong shot for him in Nightcrawler, and that didn't pan out, so the Academy could surprise us, but it would be something that I would root for anyway.
Yeah, you know, so this film, I'll be honest, I mean, like, people really, really are enjoying this movie, and they really like it a lot. I like it on the surface. I think it works fine as a movie, and the performances are the reason to check this one out, and not just from Jake Gyllenhaal, but also Tatiana Maslany and Miranda Richardson, who are both equally excellent in this movie as well.
I agree. I was very stunned by Tatiana Maslany, especially. She's just rock solid throughout in terms of performance. She gets all the different shades from strength to weakness and everything in between.
Guilt.
Guilt, absolutely. I really like Miranda Richardson playing like the mom who wants to... she is essentially taking advantage of her son's unintentional fame for her own benefit, but she doesn't really understand that. I was sort of reminded of Melissa Leo in The Fighter just a little bit, where it's that same sort of Boston mom that is just... You you don't have to root against her because she's not exactly the best of people. But at the same time, you sort of get where she's coming from in terms of seeing a situation and wanting to improve her situation with it.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying with that. And that comparison is a good one to make there, too, because I'm going to apologize straight up right now to all the people that live in Boston that may be listening to us right now. But I'm getting really, really tired with the way Boston is being depicted in film. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. I personally am not bothered by it.
Just the constant cursing, like the loud, obnoxious, oh, fuck you, you know, like that just constantly, it's like, it's annoying and I'm just tired of it. And every single movie that takes place in Boston, it's like The Departed started all of this pretty much. And now every film that's set in Boston has to be, what movie did?
Good Will Hunting.
Oh, Good Will Hunting. Yeah, no, that is true. Damn, you're right about that, I guess. Wow, we're going really far back. Okay, so Good Will Hunting. You are to blame for, honestly, at this point, stereotyping the people of Boston. Because before that, Boston was just Boston. You know, it was never part of America. Now it's like, this is like the only place in the world where it's just constant beer drinking, constant swearing, and delinquents left and right that are just, you know, low-income families trying to get by. But man, oh man, it's like nobody can take a moment to just step out of their own ass and recognize the situation and what's going on. Like, Jeff Bauman is going through, internally, a very, very, very difficult transformation where he has to adjust his entire life, and nobody other than Tatiana Maslany is stopping to ask him, how are you feeling? What's going on? Is everything okay? Instead, just the behavior and the level to which they exploit him for their own benefit, which I can understand. I get it, considering where the family is coming from and their social stature, I guess, within the community and so on and so forth. But it's just, I don't know. I just found it to be like, I didn't enjoy spending time with these people.
Well, and I think, so I get what you're saying in terms of, A, the Boston betrayal. I get that. It doesn't bother me so much, but I definitely get that. The exploitation of the family, I definitely agree that it's irritating in the sense that they're awful people, but I know enough psychologically to say that that's not exactly an uncommon thing, but then also, I think they're partially there to help you sympathize further with Jeff and Aaron, the girlfriend, a little bit by extension as well, because you do feel sorry for, I mean, you get the scene where he starts to have a breakdown at the Boston Bruins game, and it's just the two of them there, and you're really sympathizing, but then they also cut back to the family, and there's like, oh, cheering, Jeff, yay, Jeff, this is going to go places. And it's like, yeah, I think you're meant to dislike them because it allows you to cast more sympathy with the two people who you do like
well,
in this movie.
Do we really like Jeff Bauman as he's portrayed in this movie, though?
I do.
Well, because to be honest, he's a fuck up. And I mean, he admits it. There's that scene in the scene in the car where, I mean, it's in the trailer where he like shouts at her, I showed up for you. Like, that scene is like really emotionally charged, really, really like raw and intense. And he admits to her that he's a fuck up. And that's really good that he recognizes that. But I was just, one of those things, once again, where it's like, get your head out of your ass. If you know that you're a fuck up, change and do something about it. And he, you know, spoiler alert, he does, you know, eventually, you know, make changes by the end of the film. But to me, it was like too little too late, man. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know why this girl is sticking around for you other than the fact that she feels guilty that she partially caused this for you in a way.
Well, one, I think I do sympathize more with him because while he is a screw up, it often takes time for people to really recognize that and to, as you put it, get their head out of their ass. I mean, like, while I haven't dealt with PTSD, I have dealt with depression before. And when you're in that state, it all the encouragement and telling people or having people tell you to get over it, just, it doesn't work that simply.
A lot of people don't understand depression. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, and PTSD works the same way. It's not this little thing of, oh, just don't remember it, don't think about it. It's like, no.
Well, then the question is, why doesn't he actually tell anybody that he has the PTSD? How come he doesn't seek help? Why does he, you know, just take it on himself? If, you know, and Erin recognizes it. She knows that he's going through something that's very, very difficult. Why doesn't he do anything about it?
Because a lot of people feel shame over having these symptoms because they feel like they shouldn't. They feel like they should be stronger. I mean, you're talking
pun.
Working class people. Yes, yes, haha. That was unintentional. But anyway, like you get working class people or even just people in general who, when they are experiencing these symptoms, they don't want to admit it because there's still a stigma attached to it. We've gotten better
Jeff
over time.
Jeff doesn't strike me as the type of person that has a tremendous amount of pride.
That, yes, exactly.
But if
pride is not something you want to give up, especially when you've got the eyes of the world upon you and you're trying to be this symbol and you've been had unintentional fame thrust upon you.
But he doesn't even seem like he wants it.
And that's part of it, though, is that he can't deal with it because he's not capable of dealing with it because it's too difficult.
Okay. Okay, that's fair. All right. Well, listen, we found common ground. There we go. All right, so moving off of that then, because that is my, believe it or not, my first criticism was the portrayal of Boston in this movie. My second criticism was the Jeff Bauman character and how he, you know, just mishandles this entire situation, I personally felt like. Or maybe it's just the way it was portrayed on screen. I don't know. I understand it's based on a true story and they have to obey the true story. Now, I'm going to say that because my third criticism of the movie is something to do with the fact that I'm just sick and tired of seeing the same freaking formula in all of these quote-unquote inspirational handicap movies. Movies where a character starts off the movie normal, something terrible happens to them, now they have to readjust, and they become a figure of inspiration for everybody else. And the part of the reason that I am tired of this is because I'm not seeing anything new brought to the genre. You know what would have made this movie a hell of a lot more interesting? And I know that this isn't the true story, like I said. So, you know, this, they'd have to totally rewrite the whole movie and not make it about this. It could have been like an original screenplay or something. But have Tatiana Maslany in the wheelchair. Let's see a movie for a change where it's the female who is the one that has to overcome this obstacle and still portray Jake Gyllenhaal as the fuck-up boyfriend who has to still change. She's the strong one, and she's the one who, despite her condition, is choosing the right path to take and is the one who's actually stronger, and have him be the one that has to change from a place of, honestly, privilege at this point because he's got both of his legs. That would have been a far more interesting movie and unlike anything else I feel like I've seen. Otherwise, this movie checks off all the boxes. And you know what I started to do? Other than the great performances, some solid direction from David Gordon Green, I just was like, yawn, yawn. I know where this is going. Yawn.
That's fair. I mean, I don't entirely agree with all that. I do get what you're saying, and I somewhat agree that, yes, it is becoming cliche and repetitive in terms of what you're going to get plot-wise. I think where it works for me is it overcomes some of that cliche by focusing on other aspects besides just overcoming disability. I think the dysfunctional family dynamics add to it a little bit. I think the bigger thing for me is how do you deal with unintentional fame, especially when you're being pressured by your family, your friends, and quite frankly, a nation to try and be this symbol of hope and strength in a time of trouble. I don't know that we get that aspect quite as much in some of these now.
I think the second point we do, I think with the community coming to him at the end and him taking the time to just simply meet these strangers who tell him that, you know, he helped save their lives and made them feel better because, you know, of him just being out in the world and showing that the terrorists can't win and can't break them down. I thought that, you know, resolved itself very nicely. But the family aspect, I still left the movie thinking that that part of the movie was left unresolved. And I thought that was a lot of drama for nothing, honestly.
I don't know that it was unresolved, because I think the fact that you get the scene, well, I guess towards the end, but he gets some news from Tatiana Maslany about something that's going to happen, and he at first can't handle it, but he eventually comes around and figures it out. And I think that it doesn't resolve it as neatly as I would like necessarily, but I think there's at least some small level of resolution there.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that. I fully get it. Special effects in this movie were pretty on point. I want to say, in regards to, you know, digitally erasing Jake Gyllenhaal's legs, you know, it's
yes, I agree.
Very physical performance by him. Very physical. You know, you could tell there were times where, and he's not necessarily built like he has been in other movies. He's definitely a little trimmed down for this one. I saw. So I mean, it definitely had to have been difficult in many regards for him, and ultimately, I think that is what will make people go, "Oh yeah, we're definitely going to give him a nomination for it," because it's an emotional and it's a physical performance in the end.
Yeah. Well, so one thing I would also say on the effects, I like that it doesn't cheapen out, and like we'll show you the legs once or twice, and then the rest of the time we'll just show him from the waist up, so you don't have to see it. You're seeing the stumps a lot.
Oh yeah.
Which means they have to do that a lot, and it works very well every single time.
Yeah, David Gordon Green does a really great job, a very great job, at showing how much pain this guy is in, especially initially in the beginning. You figure these are still very much open wounds that have to be extremely sore, hurt like a motherfucker. I mean, this movie has one of my top three favorite shots of the year so far. And it's this shot where in the background, the camera's on an angle looking down. And in the background, you could see blurred out of focus what's left of Jeff's legs. And they're bandaged up. And in the foreground, Jeff's on the right side of the screen. Aaron's on the left side of the screen. And they're in focus. And they're just looking directly at each other. So they're pulling up the sides, the legs are in the middle, out of focus, and your vision is constantly like moving left, right, and in the middle, and the doctors are removing the bandages off of Jake Gyllenhaal's legs for the first time, and you see like the lights moving around, you see the hands coming into the background, blurred out and removing the bandages and such, and Jake is looking at Aaron, and then when you see the motion of the bandages come off, you just see Jake just wince like in pain, and it's an extraordinary shot and a great piece of acting and just a really, really wrenching moment. It's moments like that that I was very, very hooked into the movie. And once again, it all comes down to focusing on the performances and letting the performances drive the film.
I absolutely agree. So speaking of that one shot, I also like how it's paired with the following shot where we pan down and we're now looking up from the bed and you can see the stumps and Gyllenhaal's face clearly at the same time. And so you get both effects where it's obvious that the damage that's been done to his legs as well as the pain that, and I think some of the more severe reactions of pain that he lets out to the point where it induces him to vomit because it's just so painful. And so I think those two things work together very well also.
Yeah. What did you think of David Gordon Green's recreation of the bombing itself?
I thought it was rather effective overall. I think not focusing so much on the bombing itself is probably the better scenario. It spends a few minutes at the bombing site and you get some flashbacks where you get, we actually see the carnage that was unleashed and the makeup and the flashback that Gyllenhaal has where he sees what's left of his legs before they've been all bandaged up and amputated and such is really effective.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a miracle that, you know, the guy doesn't bleed out, honestly. It's a miracle that that sort of thing happens for anyone that loses a limb and, you know, manages to get help in time, that their life is ultimately saved. I thought he did a really, really great job at showcasing the dizziness, the chaos of it all. Clearly, he's in a state of shock. And I mean, it was heart-wrenching. I mean, There were multiple times in this movie, I counted, I think, three separate times where tears welled up in my eyes, because the movie holds that kind of power. As much as I've stated criticisms about the film and, you know, flaws that I believe it has, this film still overall worked for me, which was like some sort of a miracle in itself, because, man, I went into this movie expecting it to be... I don't know. I guess maybe I don't know what I was expecting. But when I walked out saying to myself, that was emotionally charged. It was raw. It was honest. It was powerful. I chalk it all up to David Gordon Green's steady direction and the performances overall. It's just the quality of the writing is what really, really kind of kept me down a little bit. And a lot of it, once again, just has to do with I feel like I've seen this film before. It's just different people. At the end of the day.
Well, and I think that's where, at least for me, the emotional aspect that you mentioned kind of overcomes some of that. I mean, it is genuine when I'm sitting there experiencing tears watching this movie, because I'm not one who generally cries at most movies.
I am.
But okay, I'm definitely not. So when I get multiple scenes in one movie that make me do that, I have to give it at least some credit, because that's not something that normally happens to me.
You know, I totally understand that. Let's move over to final thoughts. Grade out of 10. Oscar potential. Garrel, take it away.
So I think the one thing that hasn't been mentioned that I found that I liked is how it tones down a lot of the nationalism and jingoism of, it's like, oh, we can't. I mean, it mentions that we can't let the terrorists win and all that, but it's very, very minor. It's not one of those things where it's all about, oh, we have to show how strong we are because we can't let the terrorists win. It's more a human-centered story on just the day-to-day difficulties of someone dealing with PTSD, dealing with physical disability, dealing with dysfunctional family, having fame thrust upon him, whether he likes it or not. And so I liked that it wasn't all just, oh, America, rah, rah, rah.
It's a great companion piece with Patriots Day, I think, to see the two different sides of the event.
Well, we've discussed that I'm not a fan of Patriots Day, so I'm not going to touch that one.
I loved Patriots Day. Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, you do have to agree, to, you know, in the sense that, you know, two films dealing with opposite sides, though, of this event. You know, one showing the police side, the other one showing the humanistic side of the victims and, you know, what they ultimately had to go through.
Yeah, there's just some writing issues with Patriots Day that bother me quite a bit.
Wow, we're doing like a flip-flop here between the two films. That's very interesting. Okay, all right. Anything else you want to touch upon, or?
I think that's the main thing. We've covered a lot of the strong points for me.
Stronger points, maybe?
That pun is just never going
to
go away.
No, it's not. I'm going to have to like write an article at some point on the site, like, Jake Gyllenhaal is looking stronger for the Oscar every day.
And then Gary Oldman comes in. And those
yeah,
folks are
right.
Bashed.
Gary Oldman's like, what the hell are you talking about? I know. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is going to be a solid number two, number three. The whole season long. He's not going to win any major awards. He's going to be a part of every single conversation, I feel like. I think he'll be at every single show. And ultimately, I think he's going the whole way to that second Oscar nomination. If he manages to deliver a performance next year that is just better than this, I don't even know if like that's possible, but maybe something on the level of a Nightcrawler again, I think that the momentum is what gives him the win. Then again, it took Leonardo DiCaprio until age 40 to win the Oscar. Jake Gyllenhaal is 36. And here's another thing, too, about the performance, actually, now that I'm talking about age. Jake Gyllenhaal plays a 28-year-old convincingly well.
Well, I think a lot of it also has to do with I think he looks older than 28, but because of the situation that he finds himself in, the haggard nature of his face kind of masks that a little bit.
But it's more of the behavior, the way he talks, the way he carries himself. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal has proven that when he commits to a character, it's not just Jake Gyllenhaal on screen playing a character like somebody like George Clooney. Jake Gyllenhaal really becomes the character to every single minute detail. And I don't know if, I mean, maybe you didn't feel this way, but I looked at him and I said, man, clean shaven and just the way he's kind of like looking in this movie and everything, he still has those young boyish looks. Yeah, I could believe it. I could believe he was 28 years old.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So Oscar potential.
I think best actor for Gyllenhaal and supporting actress for Maslany.
You think Maslany could really go all the way?
I think she's got decent potential. I mean, because of the type of movie that this is in, the performance that she gives, because of the so many different layers that she has to get, she has those powerful sort of emotional scenes that you would expect from something like that. So I think there's a decent chance.
Yeah, I walked out of my screening and there were people who were saying that they were more surprised and actually taken by Maslany's performance more so than Gyllenhaal's. I don't know if that's because Gyllenhaal was more of like a granted, like we went in knowing he was going to be great. We didn't know how good Maslany was going to be. And to see truly that she is remarkable in this. I think after winning the Emmy and being a television actress for so long, this could be like her coming out party in Hollywood movies in a way. And if the Academy wants to go there with a first round nomination for her, first time and supporting actress, I'm not opposed to it whatsoever. I think the category is at a point where it is weak enough that she probably sits at number five, number six for me. So I could totally see it happening. I think those two are the film's only chances.
Probably. I just don't think the makeup or the effects are going to be good enough to warrant something like that.
No, I don't see directing. I can't see screenplay. I don't see picture happening.
No.
I think it's the two performances or just Gyllenhaal. There's no way Gyllenhaal misses, though.
Sure.
Great out of 10.
7 out of 10, I think. I think there's enough good stuff in there to warrant a fairly good review, but there's some of the cliche stuff, as you mentioned, that does hold it back a little bit. But I think the emotion and the performances and the direction and the effects and makeup add up to a fairly decent review.
Yep. I'm kind of with you on that as well. I mean, I think maybe I should see it again just to see if I go up on it a little bit. I don't think I would go down on it. I'm at a 6 out of 10 on this one. I think my issues with this movie may be stuff that's boiling over from other films that have just kind of culminated with seeing this one. And like I said, and that's just the way Boston just continuously gets portrayed within film, as well as these stories of quote unquote inspiration and how much they just seem to check off the same story beats all the time. And I just feel like, you know, I always walk into these movies knowing what to expect and I get exactly what I expected. And I'm just waiting for something different. I want something to just come around. And I want Hollywood to just be bold and daring with this. I guess we could call it a genre at this point. Just give me a very unique movie that deals with PTSD or someone in a wheelchair or, you know, whatever, an illness, something. Just give me something a little bit more, just a little bit more. The performances and the writing in parts, the direction. I mean, David Gordon Green, I think this is his best directorial effort, actually. I was very, very surprised with how well this movie flowed and how well he handled a lot of the scenes, especially the emotional scenes. He helped give them a very, very dynamic feel, and he really did his best to concentrate on the performances and let those drive the story overall. So even though he won't get any Oscar consideration for it, I really do commend him for it in the end. So 6 out of 10 from me for now. And Matthew Garrow, where can they find you on the internet?
I am at NovaMG7 on Twitter, and I am a reviews and podcast contributor for Next Best Picture.
And you can find me at Next Best Picture on all of the social media networks. Be sure to listen to us and subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and CastBox. If you like this podcast, you like what we have to say, and you want to give us some feedback, be sure to do so at Apple Podcasts, where you can leave us a 5-star review and literally nothing else other than a 5-star review. Believe me, I mean, the option is there, just don't do it. And with that said, thank you so much for listening. We will see you all next time.
Hi, I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.